So I just wanted to first start with checking in with you about the BC Rail case. Can you give me an update since we last spoke about a month ago?
The BC Rail case, and it is properly described as a case, continues. The trial formally hasn't started yet. Madam Justice Bennett has announced she is recusing herself from the trial. She will not be the trial judge, and we're awaiting the appointment of a trial judge. The next major application is this Monday, August 31st. Defense counsel are arguing that they want the right to cross-examine Patrick Kinsella, a well-known liberal insider who certainly was working for BC Rail at the time of the transaction and the sale, but is alleged to have been working likewise for CN at the same time, and that's what the defense wished to cross-examine him about.
Can you talk a bit more about Mr. Kinsella's role and why it matters in this case so much?
Well, the defense essentially alleges that they, the accused, were really just following government orders, that they did nothing quote-unquote wrong. They were simply taking direction, and that Mr. Kinsella had a role in the sale of the railway as a close friend of the premier, a well-known liberal friend and insider, fundraiser, etc. And so they want to cross-examine him, presumably to elicit from him evidence that would support their basic defense. And that has always been pretty clear from the start that that's what it's about. The problem is that it is now 5.5 years since the unprecedented raid on the legislature, years since the charges were laid, and the possibility of the case being and the charges being dismissed ahead of the trial grow with each passing month. So it's a tough it's a tough thing for British Columbians who are angry about the broken promise by Gordon Campbell to sell their railway, to face the prospect that this thing may never actually see the light of day in a courtroom.
If we reach that point, what happens next? Where do we go from there?
If the case is dismissed and presumably the special prosecutor doesn't appeal that decision, then the opposition, and I certainly on behalf of the official opposition, have called for a full public inquiry into the sale of BC Rail to cover all aspects of the sale, the involvement, the allegations of corruption, everything to deal with it. The likelihood of Gordon Campbell ordering or the Attorney General directing that public inquiry, I would say, is pretty slim.
That was going to be my next question. Is is there any support from the government?
Oh, the government has done everything it can to delay this trial, in my view, notwithstanding the many promises of the Premier to be open about this and to cooperate fully. It's clear now, according to the latest application in court and the information given by Mr. Copley, the cabinet's lawyer, that all of the emails, the most relevant emails to this, 2002, 2003, when the government was supposedly doing a core review and, negotiating the sale of the railway, those emails are gone. Gone for good.
Well, and that's one of the things we were talking about a month ago, is that I think August 17th they were saying that the emails would be released, and there was quite a bit of trouble actually finding those emails, and I thought that was particularly interesting, and I don't know if you have any more thoughts on that.
Well, the interesting thing is, as we discussed, the initial affidavit, particularly Rosemary Harris, I believe her name is, said, look, the emails are gone. Then there was a second affidavit filed in the proceeding in which she said, well, the order to destroy them was given during the election, and it wasn't clear whether they were or weren't destroyed. Then Mr. Copley provided a whole series of further affidavits in the proceeding, which were reviewed earlier this month in application before Justice Bennett. And it's clear that were still in the process of attempting to retrieve further emails, that they weren't all destroyed, certainly the ones from 2004 on, but reiterated that the ones from 2000 to 2003, the crucial ones, the ones which would hopefully provide a defense for the accused and reveal exactly the role of the Premier and the Premier's office and everyone else in this, frankly, corrupt deal, those are gone. it's shocking, and it's amazing to me in some respects that notwithstanding the efforts of many, some in the media, Bill Thielman, Mr. Mark Hume at the Globe and Mail, and a few others to try and keep this story before the public, how little public interest there's been in a government that appears on the face of it to have gotten away with destroying crucial emails relevant to a criminal case involving a major allegation of corruption.
And why is that, do you think?
I think the case has just dragged on so long, and there haven't been, you know, it's off the public radar, frankly. It got a lot of coverage earlier this year around Mr. Kinsella, particularly at the around the start of the election campaign. It certainly got some coverage when the destroyed emails were announced, but again, it's died down. I mean, unless there's something happening dramatic in the courtroom. And quite candidly, it is not, as they say, really a TV story. It's more of a print story. And the truth is that most British Columbians get their news from television.
Right. Last time you mentioned that one leading political scientist in BC has called this the biggest scandal in the province's history. Do you think the media has to take some ownership over the fact that they're letting the public down on this?
I think they do, but, you know, in fairness, and you always should engage in a little self-criticism, perhaps I, as the opposition critic and the opposition generally, haven't done enough to try and keep this in the public eye. But, you know, I have great faith in the justice system, notwithstanding the many criticisms. I think as time goes on, we're going to get some more relevant information out of this case. I think what happens on Monday is going to create media interest, particularly around Mr. Kinsella. If the judge orders cross-examination of Mr. Kinsella, that will be a major story, and that will probably provide a great deal of information for the public on the BC Rail sale.
Okay, so we'll look forward to Monday, and then beyond that, what else is coming up in the case?
Well, we're still talking about a trial date, and a trial that will take many months is the best estimate.
Mm-hmm.
There will be applications following the completion of the disclosure applications, though, by defense, they've made it clear, applications to dismiss the case.
Hmm.
And so we are a ways from a trial yet, and indeed may never get to a trial.
Okay. Well, we'll follow up with you on that, but I want to talk now a bit about the throne speech we heard on Tuesday.
Yes.
And what were your initial thoughts after hearing it?
After having heard so many Liberal throne speeches, both outside the legislature when I was in private life and back in for the last 4 years, candidly, it's just another list of promises to mm-hmm. be broken. And in this year, at least they had the decency to shorten the list of the throne speeches down from a record 39 pages from February of this year down to 20 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my essential view is, you know, things are really tough for a government when the highlight of the throne speech is the promise of a major tax increase and 4 years of deficits.
Yeah. Or a cell phone ban while driving.
The Liberals are in trouble. They're in deep trouble. Their percentage of popular support has gone from 46 in the election roughly down to 34. People are using the term publicly, calling them liars. I don't think they have any credibility. Most of their, or many of their major policy shifts are in tatters. You know, they privatize BC Ferries and say it's beyond our control and now want to review the salaries of BC Ferries executives, particularly David Hahn, who's making $1 million a year for running it. And I think, frankly, that is a clear admission that their policy didn't work. In addition, they're doing the same thing with the TransLink board. Again, another fiasco where they have taken any quote-unquote public input out of it, because as you know, elected officials don't run TransLink anymore. It's not politicians who are responsible to voters.
Right. Well, and talking about looking over, like taking direct control over a number of agencies, the government had just announced that they would be considering taking control over agencies if they can do a better job managing them.
Exactly. This is the deprivatization.
Right.
I mean, we've gone from saying the public service can't do it to bringing it back into public control. And that was one of the points I made in my response to the throne speech yesterday, which I invite your listeners, if they're really interested in what goes on in Victoria, to go to the legislative website to watch it, to get answered, and to read it. The fact is, this government is engaging in reversal of many of its major ideologically driven changes. They have proved ultimately disastrous.
What's the province going to look like if the government takes direct control over Crown corporations and health authorities, and saying that it can manage them better?
If they get the right managers and they're open and transparent, I think there is a possibility for us to restore some health to our public health care systems and the public service generally. If they continue down this path of cuts and failure to recognize their responsibilities to British Columbians, things could get a lot uglier, too. The trouble is that when they came in and they got rid of so much of the public service, they let go a lot of good expertise. And, of course, then they've had to hire many of these folks back on contract at further expense to the government while they're out there collecting pensions. It's a common enough problem that I think shows that the Liberals just didn't understand what they were doing. It was ideologically driven. It didn't have a basis in common sense. And the public has suffered for it. Taxpayers have suffered for it. And I'm hoping that they will follow what the opposition has been telling them to do for a long time, and that is to reverse the policy.
Right.
But they'll never admit they made a mistake, of course.
Right. To me, I mean, this pattern resembles what goes on in many parts of the U.S. You see state governments, they either take control and then can't fully fund programs and services, and then the public loses all trust and faith in the government to provide those services, and then it's such an easy move then to completely privatize. Do you see that pattern occurring in BC?
That is arguably the Liberals, jumped to privatization without any proof. Bringing them back under control now may provide them with the ultimate proof to
make it fail.
To make it fail, because they will underfund. I don't know that they're that smart to do that, but you never know. But, you know, it's very clear that the whole concept of downsizing government significantly, of cutting taxes across the board, particularly for the wealthy and major corporations, is failed public policy.
Great.
And it's, frankly, I think it's time my party perhaps took a stronger stance on this and started to talk about it more openly. We have engaged in a failed agenda in this country for the last 20 years. It has seen a significant increase in homelessness, particularly in British Columbia. And as your listeners may well know, for the fifth year in a row, British Columbia has the highest rate of child poverty in the Dominion. Mm. It's an astonishing indictment of this government's lack of care and compassion.
Well, and now the Premier and the Liberal government are arguing that tax harmonization will meet the funding gaps and provide the revenue that's necessary to fund a lot of these public programs. Do you buy that argument?
I don't buy anything the Liberals say. You know, isn't there a line attributed to the great American wit and writer Dorothy Parker about Lillian Hellman? Basically said everything she says is a lie, including and the. That's pretty much the way I am, and I say only with a slight amount of exaggeration and sarcasm. That's pretty much the way I am with this government. They cannot be trusted. They lied to the people during the campaign around the HST. They pretended that they didn't know the economy was going into the toilet when the rest of the world was, that somehow British Columbia would escape the economic crisis. And the result today is you've got programs, for instance, the Justice Education Society, seeing a retroactive cut to its funding from government. So they're going to be left with a deficit that they're going to have to try and make up from reserves or other sources of funding. This is just one typical aspect of what's going to happen. We're probably going to see funding for hospice societies cut, and at the same time, the HST will tax you in your coffin for your funeral service.
But why do you think the Premier decided to introduce HST at this point in time? What's the reasoning behind that?
It's early in the mandate. You know, he's got 4 years to let British Columbians forget it. When they say 4 years of deficit, I said yesterday in the legislature, I guarantee one thing. in the fourth year of this government's mandate, they will magically balance the budget and say, look, we've done so much better and been so fiscally responsible and so good, we deserve to be reelected.
Mm.
I don't believe anything they say.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What do you think social services are going to look like in the next 3 years,
well,
2 to 3 years in this province?
We've already seen the impact of social service policy. I mean, it's reflected in the difficulty to obtain social assistance. It's reflected in the increased numbers of our fellow citizens who are homeless. The cost of living continues. The cost of housing continues to rise as well. Notwithstanding, we have a low inflation rate. It does go up. Food costs are up. I think to be poor in British Columbia today is dreadful. It'll be even more dreadful 3 or 4 years down the road.
What do you think the province will look like following the Olympics?
The Olympics will give a temporary boost over the few weeks of the Olympics and Paralympic Games to the economy. You know, there'll be visitors, there'll be press people here, they'll be spending money. It'll particularly help the Lower Mainland with great respect. It's not going to help Vancouver Island very much or the interior of their province at all, probably. It will give a boost. There is no question it will give a boost. But the construction side of it, which has been, arguably the major boost to the economy, that stuff is largely done. That money's gone into the economy, it's over. And so I don't think it's going to give us a significant boost.
Do you think there's any relationship with introducing HST at this point in time, knowing that the Olympics are just around the corner and maybe HST will get buried under a lot of the Olympic buildup?
I don't, in fairness, think so. I mean, the HST is announced. It comes into effect in July. But keep in mind, and you should always be optimistic, the opposition's position is this may be the one time the government will back down. The public outrage around this is huge. The amount of emails, phone calls, letters I'm receiving in my office, and I know other MLAs are getting the same sort of response, is enormous. Collected well over 1,000 signatures at a booth at the Vancouver Island Exhibition in Nanaimo this weekend past. I think that this government may back down. There is that possibility. So people need to push. They need to sign on the online petition. They need to write and phone their MLAs, particularly if they have Liberal MLAs. And if they live in a riding represented by a New Democrat, let the New Democrat know, of course, but the riding next door that may be represented by a Liberal, make sure you phone their office too.
Is the premier trying to get at a transfer of wealth here with HST?
Look, this is a gift to larger corporations who are export-based. This is no benefit to ordinary British Columbians or to British Columbia's small businesses. This is a benefit to the big companies. This is a benefit to Teck Cominco, perhaps, but it is not a benefit to the average British Columbian whatsoever. Okay. This is more of Mr. Campbell's tax shifting, which has been going on, helping exacerbate the growing gap between the rich and the poor. I mean, I describe this as the new Gilded Age, where you've got a smaller and smaller class of wealthy and a growing class of poor. And, you know, in the United States, that was followed eventually by the election of Teddy Roosevelt and legislation that broke up the big trusts, including
right.
Standard Oil.
Do you think many of these actions are being coordinated with the federal conservatives?
Oh, look, the BC Liberal Party is essentially the federal conservative party dressed in red rags. there's no question about that. There are some real liberals in that caucus, I'm sure. But, you know, the real liberals left. They didn't run again.
Mm-hmm.
Carol Taylor and Olga Illich, that was a big signal to anyone who imagined themselves a progressive or a centrist liberal. The message was they're not welcome in that party. They're not welcome in Gordon Campbell's Liberal Party. Gordon Campbell's Liberal Party has a long list of very conservative individuals in it. And I don't think that there's any question that the relationship between Gordon Campbell and Stephen Harper is strong, and they will do everything they can to support one another.
Do you think Stephen Harper is pushing for HST?
The feds like it. They like it. Because the Federal Conservative Party is dominated by real right wingers. They and their corporate friends like the policy. They see it as a good thing,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to work to support its implementation across the country.
Right. Who's next, do you think? Which province is next?
Well, there is certainly pressure on Manitoba to do it, I think. Whether or not they would do it is another question. As you know, in Saskatchewan, in 1991, they defeated the Conservatives and elected Rory Romano, who repealed the HST.
Right. So there's also been talk about recalling a number of Liberal MLAs. Do you see this?
I think that
do you think this is going to go anywhere?
Yes. The recall of Liberal MLAs is a real possibility, keeping in mind that the legislation provides that you have to wait 18 months until after the provincial election. So, you know, you're talking the fall of 2010. Where the public will be on the issue of recall at that point, it's hard to say.
So do you think this could mean, could this potentially mean an NDP government?
It could. You know, I'd optimistically love to think so, but I think you have to be realistic. You'd have to recall basically, you know, 8 or 9 Liberal MLAs. You'd have to get New Democrats elected in all of them. How realistic is that?
Right. Well, it's an interesting time. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Well, interesting times, but also tough times for many British Columbians. Very tough times. Well, and students as well.
Yeah.
There's no question. I mean, one of the signals is the elimination of the Premier's scholarship. I expect the pressure on institutions for tuition increases will be significant. This is not a time to be old, living on fixed income, a student, or poor.